and welcome aboard your maritime programme, Seascapes. On this week's edition, Norman Freeman has the tale of a drunken sailor in midair. We've details of a series of talks in Galway Bay Sailing Club. Richie Flynn of IFA Aquaculture on the delay in licences. And we have the winners in our competition for copies of Hugh Oram's Old Achill Island. First on Seascapes this week, to a project to harness the potential of marine resources for the biomedical industry, we head to Galway. The project, MarMed, is funded to the tune of over €2 million under the Atlantic Area Translational Programme. It aims to find economic and societal value from marine resources, marine sub-products, and the sustainable use of natural resources. Professor Ave Pandit is director of the NFB, that's the Network of Excellence for Functional Biomaterials at the National University of Ireland in Galway.
It's a very exciting time for us, and even in the hard times that we are in, it's terrific to get funding like this from outside Ireland, especially through the European Commission. So this is a translational program from the Atlantic area, and it's about a €2 million program, and we have been chosen to be involved in this project mainly because of our reputation and the kind of work we do and the unique space that we are in. So it's truly an exciting time for us. All of us who live in Ireland, we know that Galway is a hotbed for medical device industry. We have the ocean, we have the medical device industry. It is one of the largest hubs of medical device sectors across Europe. So it makes sense for an activity like that to be based here. So one of the things about the marine resources is that we have not really harnessed the resources for biomedical applications in the context of the avenues that seaweeds and other organisms bring to us is phenomenal. We've harnessed other natural resources on land, but sea is, and the marine is kind of uncharted territory. The listeners may know of diatoms, which is like a marine algal structures. And if you look at National Geographic, sometimes you see these beautiful structures with very, very intricate architecture. So one of the things about architectures is that, you know, our body also has beautiful architecture as well, internally, and some of our organs too. Also, it also has higher surface area. So if you were to deliver a drug or a molecule that has a therapeutic application, then potentially one can harness the surface area to deliver more quantities of the drug. In other words, if you can get inspiration of this architecture from marine sources, then perhaps we can build better structures for delivery of higher loading capacity, which at present we don't have any such presence. So these are some really, really exciting times where we can look at the architectures. We can now measure at a nanoscale, and we can really, really imitate that architecture in our labs, and then create a potential delivery device where we can deliver the therapeutic that we want.
And of course, needless to remark, a lot of this has been done with huge respect for the sea and sustainability and so on, which is very much a topic that's engaging people at present.
Oh, of course. I mean, what we would do is in the case of diatoms, we would actually get the diatoms from the sea and we would grow them in the lab ourselves. And we would culture in the lab itself. So we are not going back to the sea again and getting hundreds of species every time when we go. No, no, no. This is learning from nature. We are learning from nature and doing it synthetically in our lab. So we are very cognizant of what you're talking about.
You might explain the work of the NFB, if you would.
Yeah, so NFB is a Network of Excellence for Functional Biomaterials. It is based at the National University of Ireland, Galway. It is one of the top five biomaterials research group in EU. We have about 80 researchers working here with high level of industry interactions, which is quite obvious because we are based in Galway, which is a medtech hub. So the kind of work that we are doing is in the area of regenerative medicine, where we are trying to grow, heal skin, we are trying to heal the heart, we are trying to grow amputated feet, limbs, prevent them from amputations. So all regenerative applications we are working on. We also work with Parkinson's disease. So a lot of therapeutic tools we are developing, working close with the industry, trying to get them to the patient population. Just to give a little pitch for biomaterials are materials which you would implant in the body, and our challenge is that we need to understand the biology of the body to make our biomaterials better and can do the right, give a nice regenerative response.
And as you mentioned there earlier, Professor, this is a huge collaborative venture between so many other learned institutions throughout the EU, being led in part from Portugal, but obviously you have a number of other partners in this whole area.
Yeah, we have three Spanish partners. We also have one Northern Irish partner. So there's about nine groups in all. And for us, from the medical device space, this is the first initiative in which we are closely working with the marine research activities here. So this is a holy grail. I mean, this is truly an uncharted territory for us, and we're going to see some really good things come out of this. The next stage of development is to take it to the bedside, to the patient, from the biomaterials point of view. We want to get to the patient, get the industry interested. Create jobs for the local economy and have an Irish product in the market.
And this doesn't just obviously attach itself in terms of seaweed, it's also obviously related to algae and fish bones, and the fact that fish bones can be used in actual human bone repair. It's quite remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a waste product. I mean, we are not going to catch fish to get fish bones. Fish bones are present in the fishing industry anyway, so we are going to harness the waste products, isolate the proteins that are present and use it to heal bones. Yes, definitely.
Professor Ave Pandit of NFB at NUI Galway. And you can read more about that project on the Seascapes webpage. Balbriggan Maritime Museum has come into the possession of a most unusual catch by local fishermen. 4 28-pound cannonballs over 200 years old. Having been meticulously cleaned by the fishermen, they are now on display in Balbriggan Tourist Office, in the absence of a proper maritime museum. Every month, until they have secured a proper museum building, the Balbriggan Maritime Museum Committee will rotate a sample of the many maritime-related artefacts currently in storage, using the limited space kindly made available by Balbriggan Tourist Office on Quay Street in the town. Galway Bay Sailing Club were in touch about a series of spring talks in their clubhouse over the coming weeks. The talks are free and start at 8:30. On next Wednesday, the 20th of February, Fergus and Kay Quinlan will, I'm assured, captivate their audience with their remarkable voyages in a presentation titled Around the World from Kinvara, Many Miles, Many Lands. You can check out the log and photo gallery of their boat, the Pylades, on pylades.net. And I can assure you it's great reading. The following week, on Wednesday the 27th, the crew of the World Championships and Round Ireland campaigns from NUI Galway will relate their story. And on the 6th of March, Nick Katz relates his experience of sailing from Clifton to Greenland and back. Those talks in Galway Bay Sailing Club start at 8:30 p.m. at the clubhouse. Next to a tale on the high seas with Norman Freeman.
While at sea, mariners have to put up with one another. They do it for the sake of getting the ship or the yacht safely home. However, end of voyage drinking sessions, whether on board the vessel or in some dockside bar, can spawn old resentments and even fights. The possibility of such rows became a problem for the Ellerman shipping line on those ships that traded between Canada and India. The crews were Lascars, sailors from the Indian subcontinent. The officers were mostly British. They did 6 months' duty and were then replaced by a new contingent. Gibraltar was the staging post. A small aircraft was chartered to ferry men and baggage between there and the UK. The trouble was that some fellas began to celebrate as soon as they got off the ship. Even before the plane took off, they were under the weather. On one occasion, while the plane was over the Pyrenees, one of the fifth engineers staggered up the aisle. He bore a grudge against the second engineer, so he clocked him. A fist fight broke out, involving 4 or 5 men. The pilot looked over his shoulder and became concerned for the safety of the aircraft. He landed in Bordeaux. The plane didn't take off until the following morning, when those involved had sobered up. The Ellerman line was far from pleased at the additional cost this episode entailed. Ship's captains on the route were warned that anyone who was visibly drunk should on no account be allowed to board the plane home from Gibraltar. This was unwelcome news for the captain of our ship. He was a nervous sort of man. Not alone that, but he had a fear of flying. We had done our 6 months on the run, and now, approaching Gibraltar, were looking forward to being relieved and flying back home. Almost as soon as we docked, our replacements came on board. We handed over to them, and then made our way down the gangway, lugging our baggage. There at the bottom stood our captain with a strained face. He kept calling out in a voice hoarse with tension, "Anyone who's drunk won't be allowed on the plane. Anyone who's drunk won't be allowed on the plane." However, there was some delay before our baggage was loaded. This allowed some fellas to buy small flat bottles of Spanish brandy and store them discreetly in their jackets. Our anxious captain stood by the steps of the plane, looking intently at each man walking across the tarmac. He himself was last aboard and sat up beside the pilot. We took off and gained height over Spain. Soon the bottles of brandy were passed around behind the captain's back. Actually, there was no suppressed rancour amongst our group of officers, and no reason to expect any blows being exchanged. Eventually, our small plane cleared the Pyrenees and droned on over France. By that time, 5 or 6 of our fellows were pleasantly merry. Then, with about half an hour to go before landing at Stansted Airport, there began a chorus of that old sea shanty, "What Will We Do With the Drunken Sailor?" It got louder and more boisterous. The pilot turned round and grinned, but our captain held up a hand as if to warn that such singing might endanger our small plane. The singers took no notice of him. Now mouths opened wide and brandy horse and voices bellowed out the refrain, "Way, hey, and up she rises. Way, hey, and up she rises early in the morning." The singing only stopped when the plane began its descent and we were asked to fasten our seat belts. When the plane landed, our captain was the first to rush out the door, relieved that the ordeal was over. The rest followed him. I was the last to leave, and the pilot, a cheery English fellow, said to me, "Your captain is acting strangely. Had too much to drink, had he?"
What will we do with the drunken sailor? What will we do with the drunken sailor? What will we do with the drunken sailor early in the morning? Way, hey, and up she rises. Way, hey, and up she rises. Way, hey, and up she rises early in the morning.
Shave his belly with a rusty razor. Shave his belly with a rusty razor. Shave his belly with a rusty razor early in the morning.
Way, hey, and up she rises. Way, hey, and up she rises. Way, hey.
The Irish Rovers and Drunken Sailor and Norman Freeman, author of Sea Spray and Whiskey, and that tale from his days as a radio officer. The fifth and last of 5 regional consultative Atlantic Forum workshops, the others were held in Horta, Brest, Bilbao and Cardiff, will be held at University College Cork from the 4th to the 5th of March. The workshop will input to the definition of the European Union strategy for the Atlantic Action Plan. Blue growth and creating sustainable jobs are at the heart of the Atlantic Action Plan, which will focus on harnessing the enormous, untapped economic potential of Atlantic coasts, seas and oceans. In our competition last week, we asked you to name the publisher of Hugh Oram's beautifully illustrated book, Old Achill Island. And all of you answered correctly that it was Stenlake Publishing. So copies of Old Achill Island are wending their way to the following who were drawn from the seascape's hat: Margaret Lydon of Tourmachidy in County Mayo, Tom Sheridan in Terenure in Dublin, Mary Murphy in Liverpool, and John Dingle in Athlone, County Westmeath. The European Union will co-finance a project to raise a series of bridges on the Albert Canal in the Belgian region of Flanders to allow taller barges and ships access to this key waterway. The project will also enlarge a section of the canal. It benefits from a contribution of over 3 million euro from the TEN-T programme. The Albert Canal, the most important waterway in the Belgian region of Flanders, has a transport capacity of over 40 million tonnes, mostly in the form of container traffic, connecting the cities of Antwerp and Liège and the Scheldt and Meuse rivers. The project will be managed by the Trans-European Transport Network Executive Agency and is set to be completed by the end of 2014. You can read more about this project on the Seascapes webpage. Next on Seascapes to aquaculture. At a meeting in the Irish Farm Centre in Dublin earlier this week, farmers, fishermen and companies involved in marine energy expressed concern over the designation of six large offshore marine areas by the National Parks and Wildlife Service, which are currently under public consultation. The meeting was attended by shellfish and finfish farmers, fishermen and marine energy companies and representative organisations, as well as some of the state agencies, and was addressed by the National Parks and Wildlife Service of the Department of Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht. The event heard many individuals and companies express their lack of confidence in the efficient and transparent application of clear assessment guidelines for developments in SACs, that's Special Areas of Conservation. We head to our Sligo studios where we can hear from Richie Flynn, IFA Aquaculture Executive.
Well, listeners to the programme, Marcus, will be very familiar with the frustration that the aquaculture industry in general in Ireland has had with the whole licensing process. There are over 600 licences outstanding in terms of applications for renewals, new sites, etc., all around the coast. And well over 500 of those happen to be in these conservation areas since the late 1990s. And we are tearing our hair out trying to get those licences regularised during all that time. And really, from the point of view of business continuation, of attracting investment, of trying to plan ahead and for your markets, for your own development plans on the farm, it's impossible without a license and impossible without a clear direction from government that they're going to sort this out.
Now, this meeting you had earlier this week was attended by shellfish and finfish farmers, fishermen and marine energy companies. What do they feel about all of this, and who spoke to them about the situation?
Well, I suppose we've been on the front line on this because the first marine areas of conservation were in the inshore areas where fish farmers and shellfish farmers would operate. There have been other marine areas such as the Porcupine Bank that have been designated in the meantime. And these six new areas that were advertised before Christmas in the national press, they cover a whole range of areas from the northwest, the west coast, the southeast and the southwest, which will impact upon offshore fish farming, on fishing, and on anybody who wants to get involved in wind or wave or tidal energy in those areas. So we wanted to ask the National Parks and Wildlife Service, who are the competent authority for designating these areas, what exactly was going to happen here. And in particular, I think the most pressing thing was, are we going to be facing another 13, 14, 15 years before anything is allowed to be developed in those areas, in these six new areas, in the same way as we've experienced in the inshore areas?
What kind of feedback are you getting from the departments who are responsible for these licences?
Well, this is part of the problem, Marcus. There are far too many cooks spoiling the broth here. On the one hand, you have Europe in the form of DG Environment, who brought in the Habitats Directive, and you have the Commission there. Now, the Commission says that aquaculture development and the Habitats Directive are not are compatible, that one doesn't cancel out the other, and that economic development should carry on in these areas. That's fine. But on the other hand, you have a licensing authority here in Ireland, which is the Department of Agriculture and the Marine, who license fish farming and fishing and etc. You have the Department of Environment, who license all other foreshore activities. And then you have the Department of Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht and the National Parks and Wildlife Service, who designate the areas around the coast. And in the mix of all of these officials and civil servants, what we've experienced has been complete and utter confusion as to whose responsibility it is. You throw into the middle of that the grenade of a court case against Ireland in 2007, which found that Ireland hadn't properly implemented the Habitats Directive, and you have an utter mess with nobody willing to take responsibility, with every time you try and find somebody to take up the cudgels on your behalf, they blame somebody else. And as I described it at the meeting yesterday, it's like trying to catch an eel in a bucket of fairy liquid. It's impossible. It's always somebody else's fault. And really all we want to do is to be allowed to get on with our job. It's very frustrating, particularly if you're Irish, because the rest of the world is moving on. 2013 will be the first year in the history of this planet when farmed seafood will overtake wild seafood in terms of consumption. And that is an enormous milestone. And as we see it in Ireland, it's not a problem. It's not an environmental issue. And people often get confused. This is not an environmental issue. We can work perfectly well within marine conservation areas. It's in our interest to protect the environment and to protect habitats and to protect species. That's what we want to do. The problem isn't the environment. The problem is the bureaucracy, the red tape, the delays, the buck passing from one department to another as to who should make a decision here, the unbelievable complexity of the work that has to be done that in order to satisfy court cases, etc., at European level in terms of data, expensive data gathering. Meanwhile, you have 1 and 2 person operations trying to farm oysters and mussels who look around the coast and see that it's easier to be able to attach a pipe to a wastewater treatment plant and pump sewage into the sea than it is to farm one shellfish. It's easier to get a license to do that. And that's not right. We want to feed the population. We want to create jobs and we want to create exports. But what's up against us isn't an environmental or sustainability issue. We're quite happy with that. It's a wall of paperwork that's being dealt with by the Irish state, or rather it's not being dealt with, and we're the ones who are stuck in the middle here.
So where do we go from here? And I suppose anywhere you have a fish farm, you have sea lice, and that the stocks of existing fish will immediately be affected.
Well, that's simply not true for a start. We could spend an entire programme talking about that. The science is most firmly on the side that says that there is no impact upon wild stocks from sea lice that would be associated with any type of aquaculture. That's quite clear. As far as I'm concerned, the case is closed on that. If some people want to continue to run that for their own political reasons, then let them at it. They've lost the interest of the general public in this, as far as I'm concerned. The quite clearly, what we're talking about here is an issue of food production, of producing the highest quality seafood for a demanding market. And our problem in Ireland, and this wouldn't happen in any other sector, is that we have to turn customers away because we don't have enough fish to give them, even though we have the perfect coastline to do it. We have talented people. We have families who rely on this. We have communities, sports organisations. We have schools. We have local services that rely upon our industry. We can work with the tourism sector. We can work within environmental regulations. That's not the issue. The issue here is for the government to grasp the nettle on the regulatory side, to issue the licences, to give us confidence to plan into the future. Without that, we can't make any plans and we can't satisfy our customers' needs, and we can't move on and continue to improve what we're doing year in, year out.
Richie Flynn, IFA Aquaculture Executive, and you can read more on the Seascapes webpage. Staying with fishing, last night on Channel 4 saw the first programme in a compelling new series of Fish Fight, Save Our Seas, presented by Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall. One of the guests on the programme was Callum Roberts of York University, who has stated that the high seas are too precious to be left to plunderers and polluters. We'll stay tuned to the series and bring you more next week. Next Friday night on Seascapes, we'll hear from Gerry Flynn on what's in the latest edition of Inshore Ireland magazine. We revisit our archives and the story of the Diamantis' inventory and the passing of the last eyewitness to the rescue by that German U-boat. More on the fish fight Save Our Seas and a call for images from the Dublin Dock Workers Preservation Society. All this and much more. So until next Friday night here on Seascapes, tight lines and fair sailing.